Excision number 23192, Reel 2.
Right, we were talking about your commission board.
Oh, yes.
How did you get on?
Well, when I returned to the battalion, apparently it came through that I'd passed. So I wrote home and told them. And then a day or so later, they wrote and said, oh, it was a mistake. I was asked to come back in 6 months. So that really cheesed me off a lot. Right, if they can't take me the first time, that's it. So I went and reverted from sergeant to private. As I signed the form, which said, not in order to escape court-martial. Having had clerical experience, I became a company clerk. We moved to Northern Ireland, to Portrush. And time was getting, as we said, to 42, the end of 42. After being a company clerk for a couple of months, they brought me into the orderly room. I became an orderly room clerk. And I thought to myself, right, here's my chance. And I started reading all the ACIs.
An ACI being?
Army Council Instruction, which gave all the information necessary for all sorts of things in the army. And I came across one which said that one could be permitted to anyone wishing to become a regular soldier could re-enlist and go to a corps of his own choice. Ah, I thought, here's me chance. So I applied to become a regular soldier, 7 and 5. That's 7 and 5 on the reserve. In the Royal Armoured Corps. I thought to myself, I've marched enough. I will now go by transport and in a tank. Mind you, I'd never seen a tank up to that time, but I'd seen pictures of them. And in due course, I signed the form and I was posted to Bovington Camp. Gosh, the change! I walked into the barrack room and slipped on the highly polished floor. Everything, there were proper beds, instead of lying on the floor of the odd houses. I now had a bed. And the other chaps seemed nice fellows, and it's an entirely different world. And the food was good. So I was tested, and they said, oh, I was to be trained as a driver operator. You know, that's a wireless operator. And for many weeks, I went through that, learning the Morse code, tapping it out, and enjoyed it. You asked me previously about, did I take up sports or boxing? The only sport I'd been keen on was boxing. And on one occasion, one of the chaps in our troop was Southern Command champion. And they wanted him to give an exhibition bout. And they went around asking people to take him on. Course, Big Ed Griffiths said, yes, I'll take him on. So we duly boxed in the ring at Bovey. So I can honestly say I fought the Southern Command champion. He was very gentle with me, so we got 10 shillings each anyway for doing it. So in due course, it was now getting into 1943, in fact, well into 1943.
How did you feel the war was going from what you saw in the newsreels?
Well, I mean, things were starting to move. They were starting to get good news from the Middle East, and there were just names to me then. Little did I know I'd go there, but things were moving, and anyway, I was glad to get out of the infantry, because that battalion seemed to be going nowhere. So I thought, right. And in due course, I finished my course. Was posted to Barnard Castle to be posted to a unit. Wow! When the posting came through, it was to the Royal Scots Greys. Boy, cool. I imagined myself on the grey horse, you know, with a bear skin on the head, and God, marvellous. But of course, they'd just come back from Italy. In fact, they'd been all the way through, from Palestine through the North Africa, up through Italy. And they'd just come back in preparation for Normandy. So I went down. They were at Worthing. So I joined them at Worthing. I saw a tank for the first time. I helped clean the tank. I helped waterproof it.
What did that entail?
They were equipped with Shermans. They were American tanks, and the back of the tank was the exhaust. The engine, of course, was at the rear, and the exhaust came up the top. So we had to fit on funnels which covered this exhaust, so that when we drove down into the water off the landing craft, it wouldn't gum up the engine. It would still keep going. So I thought to myself, well, that last. And made friends very quickly there. So Trooper Griffiths was quite proud of himself. The only thing was, being new, because they were all experienced, some of them quite old soldiers who'd been right the way through, who talked about their horses, because they only lost their horses in North Africa after Palestine, when they were converted to tanks. And I began to learn about what happened in North Africa, heard about places as Jenin, and they talked about, you know, Egypt and life in the desert.
Can you remember any stories they told you?
Not really, to be honest. There were so many. There were mainly of tanks brewing up. That is, being hit. This was the trouble with the tank. If it was hit near the petrol tanks, because the whole lot would go up in flames. I mean, there were men there with the MM and all sorts of decorations. But they joked about it all. So, you know, and I just looked forward to going into action. And June of 44 drew near, and then the great disappointment. I was sent, what was it called? I was sent to the tank delivery squadron. This was a squadron that followed behind the troops. And as tanks were knocked out of action, crews would come back from the regiments and pick up a new one and go back into action. When I got there, I said, well, what am I doing here? Well, you'll come over with us. I wasn't very keen on it. I wasn't going to see action, I felt. Anyway, that didn't last long. About a week later, I was sent for to go to the third echelon.
This was after D-Day?
No, before. Third or C echelon was part of the regiment. It was where the quartermaster and the supplies came to and were taken up to the regiment during action, and where reserve crews were kept. And I was a reserve crew. So at least something was happening. And D-Day came.
Had you all anticipated the landing?
The experienced soldiers in the regiment itself were sort of used, they'd done it in Italy, you know. There was nothing to them.
When did you actually know how was the
when something was going to happen?
Yes.
We went into a sort of Liga. A Liga is a place where tanks all gather as a regiment, usually at night. And it was somewhere at the back of Southampton, in a wood. And we sat and watched the bombers go over. And then we watched the paratroops go over. Very impressive sight. And, you know, we started trickling down. The squadrons began one after another, going down, I suppose, into the Southampton area. Not quite sure where. And I was sat in the back of an ammunition truck, 30 hundredweight, sort of feeling really out of it. And I know we were sat, parked along a street, and I heard a tramp and marching feet, and I looked out of the truck, and there was a load of German prisoners of war marching up the street under guard. They'd been captured on the beaches, and this was the quickest way to get rid of them. So that was my first sight of the German army. They didn't look very happy at all. And anyway, our turn came and we went on to a tank landing craft, huge vehicle, huge ship. The vehicles were down below. we set sail, and I don't remember quite how long. I think we took a bit of time. I think we had a meal on board, actually. It took some time. And then France, Normandy came into view, and it eventually it was our turn, so still in the back of the truck. We went down the ramp into the sea and up the beach, and just seemed to park there, and idly looking around, I saw the bodies of dead German soldiers. By now, it was quite hot, that June. This was around, I think, the 9th.
D-Day plus 3.
Yeah. And by that time, of course, the regiment had landed and gone in. Well, I was preparing to go into Ligo with the echelon, and up came a dispatch rider on a motorbike. Now I heard a shout, "Griffiths, get your kit." So I got the kit, "Go on, get on the back." On the back of the motorbike, and off. I was going into action. Boy, oh boy. It was a real sort of great up to the regiment C squadron, but of course, I mean, I'd never been in a tank in my life other than sort of standing on one. I'd never been in one that moved, and they said, "Right, Griffiths, over to that tank there."
Would that be a Sherman?
A Sherman. Just an ordinary 75mm gun. You're the lap gunner. Well, the lap gunner in a 75mm Sherman was a chap who sat next door to the driver. The driver was down below with his own hatch, and the hatch next to it sat the lap gunner with a Browning, American Browning 300 machine gun in front of him. And that's more or less all he had, a periscope. And I think, the main switch was near the lap gunner. His job was, when the tank was to start up, he had to switch on the main switch. And anyway, I was in a tank. We moved off into action, closed down the hatch, looking through the periscope. Oh, God. It wasn't the action I was scared of, it was the tank. For about the first time in my life, it bucked, and the driver seemed happily enough. We came to the edge of a railway line. He simply balanced her on the edge, and down we went. Onto the track, and up the other side, and so into action. I was more scared of the tank than anything else. And then Old Nasty started sending some stuff around. And gradually I seemed to settle down, because looking through the periscope, I could see the shells bursting all around us. It was like being at the pictures. In fact, I didn't like being closed down. And sometime later on, I often remember we were alerted to go off into action, and I didn't close the hatch. We were caught off in a hurry, and the driver didn't have time to close his hatch. And he was yelling at me, "Close your hatch! No, you know, you've got to stick your head up, so am I! Close your hatch!" So, well. But the Scots Greys were part of the 4th Armoured Brigade. The 4th Armoured Brigade was made up of the 44th Regiment Royal Tank Regiment and the Sharpshooters, which was a London yeomanry regiment, all experienced. And I suppose because of their experience, 4th Armoured Brigade seemed to be used almost as a division. We didn't belong to a division at all. We wore the desert rat, but ours was a black rat on a white field, where the 7th Armoured Division, the so-called desert rats, wore a red rat on a blue field. And GHQ seemed to use 4th Armoured Brigade like a division. I think wherever extra armour was needed, 4th Armoured Brigade was sent there. And so we were switching all along, up and down the front, anywhere, you know. The only sort of positive places I really remember was Caen. That was quite a business.
Were you involved in the fight for Hill 112?
Yes. Yes, I was. We were got up there, and we were sat in position. There were Canadian troops, I remember, around us in trenches. And then somebody spotted something moving low down, and they identified them as sort of doodlebugs. They were like remote controlled little tiny tanks moving up. Two of them, I think there was. So there was a lot of argument going over on the air, and eventually a tank from another troop fired at the leading one, which blew up, and the second one seemed to go up in sympathy. Well, that caused chaos amongst the poor Canadian troops that are trying to climb into our tank. Oh, God damn it, let's get in out of here, you know. They didn't really like us being there because we attracted attention. Then New Jerry would start stonking us. So they were glad when we moved off. Another action I remember was the Falaise Gap. Jerry was retreating pretty quickly. And of course the German army only had, on the whole, horse transport. And not our unit particularly, but units got up towards this gap. Their intention was to close this gap and cut them off from their line of retreat. And they just machine gunned all these German transport. I went down later. All these dead horses. Now they just bulldozed them off the road, and dead horses had wrecked wagons, you know, dead troops. It was a horrible sight.
How did you feel?
Well, frankly, I blame the Germans for not being so up to date as we were. And see, using horses in, you know, modern warfare was ridiculous. It's such a waste.
Did you have any rests from service and active service at that time? Did you?
Not at that time, no. We made our way up into Belgium. And the squadron was moving up, and heading towards Holland, and we threw a track. The tracks of a Sherman were driven at each end. The main wheel, like a cogwheel at the back, drove it, and it went over an idler. And there were several idlers along, and wheels with rubber. They were rubber on them. It was to keep the track, you know, in position. Well, when you throw the rubber, you've got to stop. Otherwise, the bare metal underneath bites into the track. So this happened in a village in Belgium, Saint-Livien-Hautem. It's approximately 25 kilos southeast of Ghent. And there we sat, and the regiment went past. And other regiments went past. And there we sat. And gradually, nobody else went past. We couldn't move. The regiment had gone forward, and we were out of wireless touch. So, by that time, the villagers all came to have a look at our tank. We got talking. Of course, Griffiths, having been to grammar school, spoke a smattering of French, schoolboy French, gosh, but enough, I suppose, to get by. They seemed to understand me. Most of them, of course, spoke Flemish, which I didn't understand at all. The days went by, we ate our ration. We didn't have any more rations left. No army vehicles or anything came by. We were just stuck. Just stuck next door to a farmhouse. Well, having eaten all our rations, the farmer very kindly offered to just in for soup, primitive bread. Meanwhile, one of the crew had